Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast.
Well, it is true. I was a former member, but I escaped, as I like to say. And, you know, I want to open the program today. Hi, everybody. Jason Lewis here, your host, guiding you through another edition of the Rush Limbaugh program on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. My pleasure, as always. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. And if you were not old enough to live through the Jimmy Carter era, I want to tell you here, friends, you're going to get a second chance. The similarities, the parallels are starting to become profound between the chaos of the late 70s, stagflation, energy dependence, unemployment, the welfare, the CETA programs, commies on the march in Central America and throughout, and foreigners to the rescue. You know, there's so much to talk about today. I can hardly wait to get into some of the great Rush clips. I am the talk show host formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis, and I want to tell you there's a sleeper issue out there today that could be the downfall, I think will be the downfall, of the Biden administration as well as Democrats in Washington if the Republicans play it right. And I don't mean play it right. I just mean if they stand up and say, I told you so. But if you take a look at what's going on as the president now abroad, speaking and trying to put a happy face on what is clearly a country coming apart, not just law and order, places like Buckhead in Atlanta wanting to secede, Eastern Oregon wanting to secede, that's actually a reasonable reaction. We'll get into that a little later in the show, too. But the parallels to the one-termer Jimmy Carter are now, as I say, profound. On the day when oil has hit another new high, well, I shouldn't say today because I haven't checked, but yesterday crude hit $71.48 a barrel. That was its highest level in more than 2.5 years. Inflation has come roaring back. And by the way, inflation first shows up in asset prices, not the CPI. The CPI is pulling the wool over your eyes. Again, we'll get into inflation and the sleeper issue and all of the rest of that later. But there's no question that we are now becoming, in the span of about 6 months, energy dependent once again. The Biden administration kills the Keystone Pipeline. It encourages protesters on Midwestern pipelines like Enbridge, even though the Public Utilities Commission and courts of appeals have said, no, there's nothing wrong with replacing an old pipeline with a new one. It's killing it. It's undoing ANWR, which we put in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act in 2017 when I was a member of the House, opening finally that barren stretch, small stretch of land that no one's been to in Alaska. Well, they undid that. They're undoing leases on federal property, and they are mandating through the cancel culture and through a bunch of left-wing activists on Wall Street, primarily BlackRock, Engine Number One, and all these miserably woke corporations. I'm just about ready as a conservative Republican to say, corporate tax hikes, you want them, you got them. Because why in hell we should defend corporate America, which has the spine of a jellyfish, if not out-and-out socialists. Let me tell you what's happening in corporate America, friends. What's happening in corporate America is they are not economic entrepreneurs. They are political entrepreneurs. And that what that means is they want to work with government to curry favors for their industry, whether it means free trade so they can import slave labor, whether it means ridiculously low tax rates on carried interest for private equity hedge fund managers, whether it means you name it. Going green and commanding the Exxon board so that they can disabuse and disinvest of fossil fuels and oil. So we're undoing oil production, and that's just not me. If you look at the number of oil rigs in the United States on a weekly basis, we've gone from almost 800 rigs in 2019 down last year to below 250, barely above that right now. So we're reducing production when the economy is starting to come back and going to have a greater demand for oil. That means prices are going to rise. That means we're outsourcing energy to China, outsourcing it to Russia, outsourcing it any place, while we here at home produce rolling blackouts, which we've had a record number where I live, and we're going to get we're all going to look like California as we all go green, right? This is a deliberate reduction in energy supplies that is going to cause the price of gas to skyrocket. The price of oil already is. Rolling blackouts. All at the same time, we're doing the same thing to labor. It's more profitable to stay on unemployment at $300 a week extra from the feds on top of your FUTA taxes at work. So it's on top of state benefits. Remember the Jimmy Carter era CETA program, the training programs rife with fraud? Well, now we know that some $400 billion of the unemployment benefits were absconded by hackers abroad. So we've got that going for us, right? 9.3 million jobs unfilled right now. 9 million Americans remaining unemployed. Why is that? Because it's more profitable to go on welfare, to go on unemployment. We've got a Federal Reserve that's printing money quicker than Stephen Colbert spews out inanities. And that's pretty tough to surpass, I want to tell you. And, of course, the commies are on the rise. In Nicaragua, you'll find this interesting because this started during the Carter era, the communist takeover of Central America and Nicaragua. Daniel Ortega is running for a fourth consecutive term, and he's going to win by jailing his opponents. Count them, three, according to today's Wall Street Journal, have been arrested. Ortega seeks to silence, prosecute, and then jail his opponents. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it, Mr. Schiff, Mr. Swalwell, going after Republicans? Very interesting. And very similar to the Carter era, continuing with the theme, Maggie Thatcher came to the rescue in 1979 when she won election as the PM in Great Britain. Now, our friends down under, the Australian media, are coming to our rescue, the only ones who are recognizing the failure of American media to cover President Biden. Roll audio number one.
I want to go to the US now because the media has been gushing as their beloved Joe Biden prepares for his trip to the United Kingdom to attend the G7 summit. They're calling it the G6 when Trump's there, but Joe Biden's there, and it's momentous, and it's positive, and it's glowing, and they're trying to give the illusion that he doesn't have any disputes with any of these international leaders. What do you think of that?
I just think Joe Biden is a lucky person. He has got all the media on his side, particularly CNN. His popularity surely can only win from this because he's getting so much positive PR through the journalists who are massive fans of him. It's really quite appalling to watch. And what happened to straight news reporting, which doesn't seem to be existent there?
Nick, it's not really journalism, is it?
If Biden's due, he did get to the top of the Air Force One steps without tripping over his shoelace.
Good on him.
The reality is, you know, there are considerable question marks over Biden's foreign affairs policy. It's not proven yet. The worry about Biden is whether he really does have control or really the nerve or the confidence to impose American power in the way that Trump did. So, you know, I would be much happier to see Donald Trump at the G7, I think.
You see, what's happened here, friends, is the Democrats have been successful in corrupting and controlling America's institutions, from Wall Street to academia to the media. And their goal now is to eradicate Trump supporters and Republicans and conservatives in general. You self-censor or you'll be put away. Just like Daniel Ortega is doing in Nicaragua. That is their Marxist model. Meanwhile, we're outsourcing everything to China. Oil production will fall by 13% this year, according to the EIA. When it comes to even green garbage, China is building everything. If you take a look at the world's lithium-ion battery supply, get this. Natural graphite, 71% of those raw materials produced, China. Synthetic graphite, 49%. Lithium, 57%. Cathode, 70%. Battery cell, 75%. All China. Why is it that Australia gets it and the American media don't? Because Australia is under the thumb of China. They are terrified of China. And the American media don't give a damn. They like the Chinese communists, as Rush warned us about back in 2013.
Contrary to what most low information voters in this country think, I don't think that the rest of the world's enamored of Obama. If you read the foreign press, you get the truth about the incompetence, about the economic destruction. You read the British papers, British media, you get the truth reported about what's happening in this country because they're not part of the agenda. So, I mean, you look at Egypt. I thought Morsi was Obama's guy. I thought the Muslim Brotherhood was, that's who Obama wanted. Well, Egypt military said, screw all of you, and they kicked Morsi out and took back control of the country for better or worse. John Kerry is in Russia and Putin's fishing. I mean, these people are, I think they're clueless, and I don't think they have the slightest idea. They don't have a reverence for the country that you and I, well, at least your question indicates. To them, America's the problem in the world. America, as a superpower, makes the world out of balance. It was better when the Soviet Union was around. Madeleine Albright even said this. The Soviet Union kept us in check. A competing superpower was able to help the United States be restrained. These people think, liberal Democrats, leftists, that the American military is focus of evil in the modern world, that we are imposing freedom on people, if you can believe that, and that United States is destroying the planet with global warming, with our capitalism, with our wanton consumption of resources, and they're about cutting this country down to size. People like me think the United States is a solution to problems around the world. But when you've got people who think and the United States is responsible for these problems and on occasion have gotten close to apologizing, then I just don't take seriously what they're doing.
Gee, you mean like that New York Times reporter that was shocked out on Long Island, I believe, that she saw so many darn American flags. It was disturbing, I tell you. Rush's Wit and Wisdom, more of it coming right up on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. We are back remembering America's real anchorman, Rush Limbaugh, on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. I am your guy today, former Congressman Jason Lewis. Glad to be here. Former talk show host, you name it. I've been it all. And I lived through the Carter era and survived. I'm telling you, friends, I'm telling you what Rush was talking about with regard to foreign media catching on long before American media do was as true then as it is now. Maggie Thatcher saw what was going on in America. By the way, I know what some of you liberals out there, you Democrat partisans are saying, Lewis, what are you talking about? Slow growth. Yeah, we've got inflation, but slow growth. The only growth that matters is inflation-adjusted growth. If GDP is growing 4% and inflation is 5%, which it is and likely higher, I'll get to that later, then you've got negative growth. If your boss gives you a 5% raise, but groceries went up 8%, you took a 3% pay cut. This is why inflation is the sleeper issue that's going to undo the charlatans. And that's what happened to Jimmy Carter as well. Precisely it. There were protests all over the country in the 60s and 70s over the rising cost of living. Pricely, if you were in the automotive aftermarket like I was, I grew up in a family business, auto parts. I was the original Tommy boy. Actually, I was probably closer to Richard, if you saw that great movie. But we had price sheets for new prices coming in every week. You want to buy an oil filter? You better get it now because a new price list is coming in next week. The price is going up. This is what's going to happen here. And just as back then is happening now, the Australians get it. They understand what China is doing and taking over our supply. China's winning. China is winning. They got to be laughing at us electing Biden and giving them a pass on everything while they hollow out America. Not to mention, try to take over the South China Sea. Taiwan is next after Hong Kong. The Chinese communist threat is the only threat that matters right now. And yet, they're giving them a pass, just like Jimmy Carter gave communists a pass in the 70s. But Maggie Thatcher and abroad, they saw it. And Thatcher got elected in 1979 before Reagan. And the Australians get it. And that's why they are doing everything they can to try to warn people on this. And a big part of Carter's agenda was getting us off of fossil fuels. You remember the 1970s. Why? Jimmy Carter put on his cardigan sweater, told everybody to turn down their thermostat because the era of cheap energy was over. In fact, we would be out of oil by 2010, Carter said. Some others said in a decade. So what happened? Oil prices skyrocketed. Gas lines formed. But you know what? We were trying to get a handle on climate change. Boy, he was ahead of the curve, getting rid of those nasty fossil fuels. And here we are again. You remember during the Obama era, we were going to invest in green jobs with Solyndra. Remember Solyndra? LSP Energy, Abound Solar, A123 Solar, Ecotality, Evergreen Solar. Oh, yeah, they all failed and cost you billions of dollars. Now, today, the first failure of the Biden administration with Nordstrom, this electric vehicle truck manufacturer, or Lordstown, excuse me, electric truck manufacturer. Well, their CEO resigned over fudging the numbers. Here we go again, right? Here we go again. So we are outsourcing our energy independence. We are reducing energy production, whether it's pipeline transportation or actual leases, ANWR's off the grid, and companies are being overtaken by juvenile Wall Street millennials who want to go green. Meanwhile, President Biden is abroad saying what our real efforts are going to be. Roll audio 3.
We adopted a climate security action plan, which several years ago people thought we would never do, for reducing emissions from NATO installations and adapting to the security risk of climate change while keeping a sharp, very, very sharp on our ability to deter and defend against threats.
Hey, that was great. You know, President Biden sounds fantastic abroad, and so does her husband, Joe. I mean, he sounds pretty good, too. This is bizarre when we've got all of these threats. Law and order is falling apart. Inflation is rearing its ugly head. China's still on the march. And Biden's talking about climate change. Which, you know, to the chagrin of the media, polls way, way, way down there when people are asked, what are your big concerns? And Rush talked about this all the way back in 2007, the ridiculous nature of focusing on this.
There was an online forum with the Democrat presidential candidates moderated by Bill Maher. And Senator Biden got this question from Bill Maher. Senator Biden, forgetting about the upcoming Iowa caucus for just a moment, which would you honestly say is more likely to contribute to the death of your average American, a terrorist strike or high fructose corn syrup and air that has too much coal in it?
Air that has too much coal in it, corn syrup next, then a terrorist attack. But that is not in any way to diminish the fact that a terrorist attack is real, but hundreds of thousands of people die and their lives are shortened because of coal plants, coal-fired plants, and because of corn syrup.
Do you believe this? Hundreds of thousands of people die and their lives are shortened because of coal plants? I told you all about seeing this giant, giant cargo ship of coal on Long Island Sound heading in. Gets so big it can't get it ashore. Have to have tenders come out and take the coal in. Coal was, by the way, not from America. Senator, you want to try firing these power plants with something else? You tell us what it is. This is just pandering of the first order.
Well, sure it is. And these climate activists, most of them are trust fund brats who have all the money in the world, don't care about the cost of living. They don't care how much, how many blackouts a wind farm causes because the winds isn't blowing, or a solar panel, a farm, how much land it takes up because they don't live there. They don't care about the impracticality of relying on energy that can't be called upon at peak loads. They have their own supply. They don't care about rising prices. They've got the assets that are rising. This is the greatest sop to the rich and the uber rich ever created, which is why they're leading the charge. So they are reducing fossil fuels while they're putting people out of work in coal mines and on pipelines and elsewhere. So what's the answer? The answer is Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, who in the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan wanted to create a fund of $2 billion for the communities they put in depression because they were obsessed with going green. I kid you not. Put all these jobs out to pasture, but then subsidize them with a big government fund to keep them going. This is the future, and it is not a pretty one. And I will tell you, it's not going to play well in the midterms And when inflation starts to come back, it's really not going to play well. 1-800-282-2882. That's 1-800-282-2882. As we get to some calls with your guide today, that would be me, Jason Lewis. Let's see, debt is rising, $29 trillion and going up. We're now energy dependent once again. We've got inflation rearing its ugly head with, let's see here, the largest increase in core prices, that excludes the food and energy components because they're all over the place, since 1992. Inflation is not coming back. It's not going to rear its ugly head. It is here. They failed to snatch the punch bowl early enough, as they always do. There's nothing we can do about it, and it will be the sleeper issue. Inflation, easy money, stagflation, wages behind inflationary growth. In fact, wages are dropping below. Real wage growth is now negative. It is. Jimmy Carter all over again. In Kansas, here's Fish. You're on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Hi.
Yeah, I tell you what, let's put on another sweater and turn that thermostat down.
I'll never forget the funniest skit I ever saw on Saturday Night Live, back when they used to be funny, was Dan Aykroyd doing his impersonation of Jimmy Carter when Jimmy had a flare-up of hemorrhoids on a trip. But he combined it with inflationary mumbo-jumbo, and there he had Dan Aykroyd going, the vessels of our economy have swollen to painful proportions. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I remember. And don't forget about the killer bunny rabbit that about got him in the boat.
I mean, people don't realize how bad that time was and what a revolt that happened that caused the Reagan Revolution. Now, are there enough Reaganites left in America? I don't know, but the similarities are astounding, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what. Back in Carter days, there was more gas in this country than you could shake a stick at. They was putting it in every dang place that hadn't had the fuel tanks taken out yet. And I had, like I said, I had 22 barrels of any kind of gas you wanted sitting at the house. And me and my buddies were having fun.
And why couldn't you get it to the market?
Huh?
Why couldn't you get it to the market?
Because they didn't want to get it to the market. Because they was playing that game.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. They had reformulating rules for oxygenated fuel that put a crimp on supplies. You had pipeline crunches. You had land taken off Jimmy Carter's ANWR. The same situation here. Well, that's why when I was in Congress and President Trump was at the helm, we were energy independent because we had the right policies that promoted growth and promoted American energy exploration. Biden's deliberate policy is vis-a-vis Carter. Going green is more important and will outsource energy elsewhere and be dependent again. But I want to tell you something, and thank you, Fish, for checking in. The sleeper issue is inflation. Now, a lot of people just don't understand what this is really all about. And I want to get to that because I think this is going to be the downfall of liberalism in its current form. Actually, it's always the downfall of easy money. But understand that inflation is the direct result of spending. If the Fed did not have to monetize the federal budget, they can't tax $6 trillion more. They can't tax $5.5 trillion more for COVID relief. You can't possibly tax $29 trillion of federal debt. And they can't borrow it without roiling the capital markets. So the Fed prints the money. And they print the money in their Federal Open Market Committee. And when they do that, it drives down interest rates so they can print more money and the government can borrow at lower rates. And this is the game they're trying to play, except all the money's got to find an asset to bid up, whether it's oil, whether it's housing, whether it's bond market or stock market. We've got a massive bubbles going on, and we've got a consumer price index that is far higher than the official chart. Far higher. Even Karl Rove's getting worried. Here's what he said the other day.
The consumer price index is up 5% May over May. Gas up 56%. Now, the administration points to this and says you got to go back to February before COVID started and compare the prices. And it is a much smaller increase. But They had a focus group at Axios, though these are qualitative, they're not quantitative, but 8 out of the 13 people who were swing voters said they were apprehensive about inflation, about what they're paying for at the grocery store, the pump, and in the stores that they go to. And here's the big issue. 10 out of 13 are worried about the national debt. Look, some of the supply problems may go away, but we have added so much money to the national debt, and this administration wants to add $6 trillion to the national debt in additional spending, that it's hard to see that that concern about what's happening to the national debt is going to go away. There's a reason why a lot of people are concerned about the national debt. And remember this, part of this is the Fed is flooding enormous amounts of liquidity into the system. And when it begins to slow that back down, what's going to happen? Asset prices that are now being backed by all that money are going to begin to fall, which means we could next year see the stock market slow down. We could see the prices of other things begin to deflate, asset prices begin to deflate, real estate, housing, and so forth, some of which will be good, but some of which will be bad. When the economy gets jacked up into an artificial state by the kind of stimulus that we've put into it, you can't guarantee that you have a smooth recovery from it.
Now, Rove is assuming one thing, and he's assuming that the Fed is going to hold back, and they're going to quit buying all these mortgage-backed securities, quit buying $80 billion worth of Treasury obligations a month, which creates money out of thin air. If your economy is 100 apples, and you've got $100, the price of an apple is a dollar. If the Fed prints another 100, the price of an apple just went to $2. The money finds the goods, and that's why they're stuck. That's why they should have snatched the punch bowl, as the lexicon goes, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years ago. Instead, we had the Greenspan put, the Bernanke put, which meant the Fed would always come in and keep rates low by buying Treasury obligations at exorbitantly low rates. And that makes it difficult for anybody else to raise rates. Everything the government spends must be financed through taxes, borrowing, or printing money. They're financing it through printing money. This is why you've got to have a balanced budget amendment, why I voted for one, and why Rush demanded one years ago.
Read the New York Times from 1967, and it's, aside from the numbers, word for word, what's being said today. Even as recently as 1979, plug in the Republican demand for balanced budget amendment. One big difference between 1979 and today, a lot of the conservative media is opposed to balanced budget amendment. Back in 79, it wasn't. It was pretty much unified, the conservative media, conservative movement. Now it's been fractured all over the place out there. But it's just striking. Hits you upside the head. A cold ice shower. You realize what suckers they think we are. You realize the patterns, the playbooks, the tactics, the scare tactics, the fear-mongering, crisis mongering, all of this, it's written down. It's taught. This is not instinctive. This stuff, I guess, is what these people learn at Harvard and Yale and the Kennedy School of Government, wherever else they go to get educated, or how they're mentored. Not one shred of difference. The difference now is that we've reached a point all these years in the past where we say, okay, well, we'll kick the can down there, we'll deal with it later. We've gotten to the point where we're running out of road. We really are. This is different.
But you can save yourself some money. You bet. Save yourself $800 a year on a household expense you've got right now. That's how much money families are saving all across America when they switch their cell phone service to Pure Talk. That's because Pure Talk offers $30 per phone line talk, unlimited talk, text, 6 gigs of data a month. And if you go over the data, they won't charge you for that. Rush spells it all out.
Hey, folks, you know, you can spend all kinds of time deliberating what kind of cell phone you want to own, what kind of cell phone you want to use, but you might spend 10% of that time deciding on your cell phone carrier, if that much. Now, maybe you spend more than 10%, but really, there are options out there you may not know about. Cell phone service has become expensive. You know, I remember back in the days of flip phones. This is before 2007, before the iPhone was invented. The theory was that your service was going to be given to you as long as you paid for the phone. That's the way the experts thought the trend line was, that the service is going to be pretty much free, but you got to pay for the phone. Now that's turned upside down. Now the phone costs a pretty penny, as does service. Cell phone service has become expensive. The big brand name carriers charge a lot because, well, they can. So there's another company out there that we want to suggest you look into called PureTalk, because their focus is on providing you the best cell phone coverage and service for about half the price of the big brand names in cellular service. PureTalk gives you excellent coverage. It uses the same cell towers as one of the biggest brands. You get unlimited talk, unlimited text, 6 gigs of data for about $30 a month. It's on the same tower that you're probably using now, same towers. And if you go over on your data usage, PureTalk is not going to charge you for it. Switch to PureTalk. Keep your phone number just as it is. PureTalk will help you make that an easy switch. From your cell phone, just dial #250 and then say PureTalk. #250 and say PureTalk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That is #250 and say PureTalk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from PureTalk. Something to look into.
Well, let's see. There really was no Joe Biden, well, I should say Joe Biden meeting, but Hunter Biden laptop, and the Wuhan lab thing was all fictitious, and Trump had a meeting with the Ruskies at the Trump Tower. All of these falsehoods were promoted by a censorious media that is now engaged in a full-throated assault on free speech. Rush and I will tell you the origins of that coming up in hour two. But I want to continue with this sleeper issue, because the reason I say that is the genie is out of the bottle. The problem with central banking is you never control inflation until it's too late. And for decades, it was the Greenspan put. Understand what this means. I don't want to get too in the weeds here with you folks, but you got to understand some of this stuff. Inflation is fiat money. If the government taxes money, they take it out of your pocket and give it to somebody else. That's not inflationary. It's a tax. It's not good. It can be horribly disincentivizing, which is why we ought to have lower taxes. But you got to have lower spending to have lower taxes, and that's the problem with the supply side movement. They thought you didn't have to control spending, just lower the rates, and voila. Milton Friedman always says, no. You got to have a balanced budget. And I agree with that. But when the Federal Reserve and the Federal Open Market Committee basically lends money at 0% to anybody, it lowers artificially interest rates and creates fiat money. And right now, the Fed is buying anywhere or lending anywhere from $80 to $120 billion a month to mortgage-backed securities, inflating the price of homes, funding the government so they can dole it out for unemployment compensation and welfare. And when the Fed does that, when they sell... when they buy all of these treasury bills at very, very low rates, they are lending money at low rates, driving the rate of interest down. What they need to be doing is the opposite. They need to be buying treasury obligations and mortgage-backed securities in the open market at higher, basically above the face value, or sell them below. Either way, it would raise the interest rate. The point being, when the Federal Open Market Committee buys all these T-bills from the government, they create new money. When they sell their own inventory, they retract the money supply, and they can do that to raise rates. But it's too late. The money's out there. We've created decades worth of free money. Why do you think home prices are out of reach for young people? Why do you think groceries and gas and oil and everything else is going up? Which is a tax. People say, well, gosh, you know, if you have a balanced budget amendment, Mike here in San Antonio is going to say, well, then the speaker will just raise taxes. The speaker is raising taxes. Joe Biden and Jerome Powell and all the Fed chairs raised your taxes immensely. Try buying a home. Try buying a college education. Try buying health care. Pretty soon it's going to be try buy gasoline and groceries and everything else. How about chips? Prices are skyrocketing. That is the worst tax of all. Going back to my point, there is no free lunch. If the government's going to spend $6 trillion a year in their budget and another $5 trillion on COVID relief, they're going to get the money someplace. And if they print it, you'll have a tax called inflation. Now, the Democrats say, well, we ought to have a Patriot tax on multimillionaires' wealth, not their income, their wealth. Well, A, there's not enough of that to balance the budget. But B, it's a ruse. They don't want to tax the rich. The rich would then relocate. They'd become expats. They'd get around that like they get around everything else. If they really wanted to tax the rich to close the deficit, they'd remove step-up basis in an estate. You eliminate the estate tax, but remove the step-up basis, and you have a real whopping tax on rich estates or their heirs. You'd eliminate carried interest, which is a commission, ought to be taxed at ordinary income tax rates. Instead, it's a gift to private equity managers at capital gains rates. Electric vehicles get a subsidy. Those wealthy Tesla owners get a massive subsidy, then pay nothing into the gasoline trust fund or the highway trust fund. You'd have tariffs on incoming cheap imports for big multinationals. We don't do that. And finally, you'd leave the removal of the state and local tax deduction on the federal books so you don't subsidize New York, California, and Minnesota. No, they want to remove that. The Biden administration is the biggest gift to wealthy financiers, wealthy tech CEOs, wealthy hedge fund managers the world has ever known. They like inflation. It just devastates you. I'm Jason Lewis in on the Rush Limbaugh program. More coming right up. And greetings once again, music lovers, thrill seekers, conversationalists, and birthing people all across the fruited plain. This is the Rush Limbaugh program. I'm your guide host today, the artist formerly known, I shouldn't say artist, I don't want to rip off Prince or anything, the talk show host formerly known as Representative Jason Lewis. I want to get to this clip on Rush and free speech because we're going to talk a little bit about that next hour. Here's what Rush said about defending the First Amendment.
I don't go on the attack. We are the attacked. What we do is defend the people, the things that we love and cherish. One of those things is free speech. Another of those things is the Constitution, which guarantees it. Thank God we don't have to depend on human beings to guarantee it. The Constitution does that, but the Constitution's under assault, too. So we're worried about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's really true. And I'll tell you where it started. I said this last week. It started with this global warming mantra. We're going to get into that and where it's headed because it's becoming very, very dangerous for a free country. And I still believe a free country is worth keeping, and so did Rush. Back with Hour 2 coming right up. Okay, Hour 2 on another excursion into broadcast excellence. I am Jason Lewis. Thank you, Johnny Donovan. And I am your guide today on the Rush Limbaugh program as we once again go back and experience the wit and wisdom of L. Rushbaugh and how ahead of the curve he always was. And on policies like free speech and the mantra of global warming, which really preceded the assault on the First Amendment. I'm going to get to that in a moment. Rush was way, way ahead of the curve. But one other item from last hour I want to briefly finish up on, and that is what I believe will be the sleeper issue in 2022 and 2024, and that is the return of stagflation. Now, you have to understand what stagflation means. It's inflation-adjusted growth. So if your wages are going up 5%, but inflation is 10%, you're actually taking a pay cut. This is what we experienced in the 60s and 70s. And it wasn't until Paul Volcker reined in the money supply by actually selling, not buying securities, but having the Fed sell securities. And they would sell them at a big discount, so people got a huge interest rate, and that would drive up interest rates and shrink the money supply. And Volcker did that. He wrung inflation out of the economy. When Reagan took office, interest rates were 21.5% prime. Inflation was 13%. Now, this is the point I wanted to finish up on real quick. You say, Jason, we only have 5, 6% inflation. Core prices are only 3 or 4%. Even though that's the highest in 30 years, it's nowhere near the 1970s. Oh, contraire. Once again, the swamp is deceiving you. You ever heard of the Consumer Price Index? Well, it ain't what Grandma and Grandpa's Consumer Price Index was. Back in the Carter era, when prices were going up 10, 11, 12, 13%, we actually measured the cost of goods. That's what the CPI did. Today, we measure the standard of living. Now, this is a nuance you need to understand, because the reason I'm bringing this up is inflation's already running at 10 or 11%, maybe 12%, every bit as high as the Carter era. Look at assets, bonds, stocks, automobiles, housing, gold. That's the true sign, because the CPI is deliberately understating it so the government can borrow at lower prices and they don't have to give Social Security cost of living increases and all the rest. What they did deceiviously is change the CPI from the 1970s. First, they changed the index. They said, well, people don't buy homes. We're going to discount home prices a little bit. Well, if you're a young person, you buy a home. But that's a smaller part of the CPI than it used to be. But the real thing they did to lower the consumer price index artificially was to include what is called the substitution effect. So they said if the price of a refrigerator goes up 20%, you can always substitute an ice box for it. And if that price is flat, why, we're going to count the inflation level as flat. Who does this? The government. The end point here, friends, is that don't believe the CPI at only 5%. It is already much higher, and it is going higher. It's going to be calamitous, and the only solution for the Fed is to clamp down on growing the money supply and on rates, and that will put us into a recession. And the bond market and the stock market and the hedge fund managers, the institutional investors will scream bloody murder. And so the Fed will keep printing and we're going to have runaway inflation, a devaluation of the dollar, a sovereign debt crisis that we can't afford to pay back. And it's not just Biden, although he's instigated it in an unusually incompetent way, but it was Clinton, who had a deliberate policy of artificially lowering interest rates and expanding the money supply. It was Bush and the bailouts of 2006. And, of course, it was Obama. And that's what we got coming. Other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? I mean, these people say, oh, but the economy is great and nobody can afford it. Ask any young person if they can afford to buy a house. How about their student loan, the cost of education? How about gasoline? Oh, yeah, and health care. Oh, no, there's no inflation. It's a transitory base effect. Are you kidding me? Well, they don't want you to say that for the same reason they don't want you to say that the coronavirus originated from a Wuhan lab. Same reason that Attorney General Keith Ellison of Minnesota filed a lawsuit a year ago suing ExxonMobil for their First Amendment right to deny climate change. I kid you not. Now, these lawsuits started in New York, but all these left-wing AGs jumped on board to basically take away the First Amendment rights of anybody who disagrees with global warming. They say that the oil giant did not disclose the true costs of climate change in their financial statements. I don't know, because at one point before they got taken over, they didn't believe it. And so Keith Ellison sued them for disagreeing with global warming. In 2013, the Los Angeles Times simply said, we refuse to print any dissenting opinion on climate change. Now, folks, I'm not going to get into the science of this, because then you get bogged down and you're a scientist, you're not a scientist. The question is whether we're going to have a free country, whether you're going to be able to deny that the virus came from a bat, or hydroxychloroquine actually works. All the things that were told you couldn't say, but now we find out they were true. Same with climate change. That's when this assault on free speech started. And now the medical establishment is totally corrupt. Remember when somebody said, like CDC Director Redfield, but it was before him, a few doctors said, wait, this thing looks like it started from a lab. It was engineered. Lancet quickly printed a scathing article by a number of doctors saying, we can't have this. Every institution has been corrupted by the cancel culture. And if you don't have the right to express your ideas, whether you're right or wrong, you don't have a free country for long. It's the first thing. Look what they're doing in Nicaragua. They're not just silencing their opponents. Daniel Ortega, to win a fourth term, is jailing them. The Democrats want to jail Trump and every other Republican architect. of the Trump philosophy. Big tech wants to silence Republicans. Pretty soon, and your employer will say, if you don't vote Democrat, you can't work here. Hey, if you don't like it, work someplace else. They're already doing that on other things, as we are well aware. This is dystopian, and it is almost prima facie tyrannical. A North Korean defector, student at Columbia University, spoke to Fox News about this, about what she's observing in American trends right now.
They are so bitter. They have zero appreciation for what this country did, what the Constitution says to protect individual liberty. They have zero appreciation. They're dying to give all their liberty away. It's like, where are we going from here? The future of our country is as bleak as North Korea if we do not rise up right now. I guess that's what they want. Eventually, they want to destroy every single thing and then rebuild like communist, you know, paradise.
Yeah, that's really what they are. They are communists. But it's not pure communism where the government owns the means of production. They have their corporate buddies enforce them. Corporate America is morally and intellectually and ethically bankrupt right now. It is woke beyond belief, and it is taking away your liberties. And then they get their monopolies because they become global corporations, and they become enforcers of the government. This is where the libertarian philosophy falters. Rush saw all of these dangers long, long ago. Now, he also saw the humor in it, and the humor about the suppression of free speech, if there is such a thing, was always ever present when Rush would speak. And back in 2015, he talked about free speech being under assault.
It was Chris Rock who said he stopped doing stand-up routines on college campi because the students don't find anything funny anymore. They're too busy being offended by his jokes. Political correctness has just swamped everything. So he said, I'm not playing college campuses. You can't go out there. You can't tell jokes can't be funny because people don't laugh. They don't think it is funny. They're sitting there getting mad. They're getting offended. And so now leftist comedians are all worried. Oh, no. Now we're going to have to start thinking before we joke. You know, I don't like to make this about me. And as you people who listen regularly know, I hate it when the program becomes about me. And I strive to avoid that. When I hear comments like this, I really wonder about the two worlds in which we live in. Because these guys that are liberal comedians or liberal commentators, they just have a cakewalk when it comes to free speech. They can get away with saying anything. And not just get away with it, they're applauded. And then what they say gets written about. Then what they say gets amplified. And then what they say gets credited as great comedy or whatever. But there are a bunch of American commentators, and even, I dare say, American comedians, who have been having to pause and think before making a joke for over a decade now. I know people who've lost jobs, who've lost money. Some people who've even lost friends for saying things that liberals in America don't approve of. Liberals in their protected bubble have no idea what happens to people when their buddies set out on them and try to destroy them. But my point is this. The suppression of free speech is the goal of people on the left in this country, folks.
It certainly is, and it is the goal of tyranny everywhere. All tyrannies, whether they are fascist or whether they are communist, start with the suppression of speech, of ideas. That's where they must start. You can't have that out there opposing. That's why every tyrannical state is a one-party state, and that's why the Democrats want to be a one-party government. Now, you can call it communism, you can call it fascism, whatever you want to describe it as. Again, I say they don't own the means of production. They have their corporate buddies do that and every other institution. But the goal is the same, to shut the opposing view out and make them self-censor. Let me tell you the only way out of this. If you are afraid, or if they say that if you say this or this or this, you will offend me, then your goal must be to offend them. Back after this. Okay, 1-800-282-2882, the contact line for the Rush Limbaugh program, as I guide you through another excursion into broadcast excellence in California. James, thanks for your patience. You're on the Rush Limbaugh Show.
Oh, thanks, Jason. Hey, I love your show today, and I can't believe that you lost to Tina Smith. You know,
well,
so
I,
much
like about you must know Tina then. If anybody who says to me, Jason, I can't believe you lost the Minnesota Senate race to Tina Smith, obviously knows Tina Smith.
Well, no, I saw you on C-SPAN, I saw her on C-SPAN, and it's just like it's like 100 to 0, and her being a 0. But I really appreciate your show today and your knowledge about interest rates and taxes. So my point is this: is that if you take the Biden-Harris administration's policies to promote equity and equality, and especially promote the wealth and the advancement of people of color, minorities, and millennials. Those are all. Let's just take it face. Those are good goals. But we're spending a lot. We're spending trillions of dollars, and we're giving up our liberties for that.
Right.
But with this policy, what's going on now with the inflation, how that's going to have the feedback loop and increase cost of wages to union contracts, even things like Social Security, and then how it basically financed what that's going to do to the housing market, and that's what that's going to do to...
Well, we've already got a housing bubble right now, again, just like 2006.
But who's going to suffer more? It's going to be the people that we're giving up our liberty for and trillions of dollars. So
that is you're absolutely, that is very insightful, James. You're 100% correct. So the Democrats say they're for the little guy and they're for minorities and the downtrodden. Who are they hurting with their policies? The little guy, minorities, and the downtrodden. They're not raising the interest rate on carried interest. Mitt Romney's a big, which made him a billionaire, whatever he is, on the hedge fund managers, on private equity shenanigans. They're not putting tariffs up on big global national corporations. They're going to try to repeal SALT, which rewards high tax states at the expense of low tax states. And by the way, when they inflate this way, they deliberately hurt people on the lowest rung of the economic ladder. People who aren't making money, people who haven't bought a house yet, who don't have gold assets, who don't have their education paid for. The people in the top 10%, the wealthy, inflation doesn't matter to them. They own the assets that are inflating.
Renting the houses to them. The private equity groups are now doing all these rentals. In California, a lot of the Mexican-American community, have actually done okay, and they're buying houses. A lot of their wealth is in their houses. So, and then all the new people, they're putting their money in their houses. People, millennials, are trying to do family formation stuff. That the way to kill the economic progressive of people of color, of minorities, is to bring house values down, which will cause, and then take away jobs by all this regulation. And it's a never-ending cycle of foreclosures and economic dissolution.
Well, but foreclosures start with – here's how a housing bubble pops. And this is the psychology of the market straight out of the Austrian School of Economics. So what happens initially is prices go up and up and up, and then people spend $1 million for a 600-square-foot bungalow in Santa Monica. And then finally one day they say, oh, I spent $600,000 or $1 million for that. And then the lender says, I lent $1 million for that, and they stop. And then the bubble bursts. So if you're worried about housing values being wiped out, don't let them inflate and develop a bubble to begin with. And that is a direct result of Federal Reserve policy and why this all matters. Meanwhile, they say they're helping these people when they're not. All they're trying to do is divide them according to race. There was a tragic incident of a group of people who were protesting here in Minneapolis this week, and it looks like a drunk driver slammed into them. And, of course, the usual media reporting is all divisive by race. Obviously, these people were protesting police brutality. They were protesting the fact that Winston Boogie Smith was shot by U.S. Marshals in Minnesota a week or two ago. Well, of course, the guy had a rap sheet a mile long, had threatening posts, threatening police, and produced a handgun, and the evidence say he fired it. But they were still protesting those people. So they're creating that sort of division, social chaos, while as a cover for really decimating the poor and the middle class with their economic policies. It is about the most cynical thing you could possibly imagine. Dividing the country by race. Handing out COVID relief according to your skin color. Harvard letting people in according to their skin color, discriminating against Asians. So I think the social chaos that's causing places like Buckhead in Atlanta to want to secede, or Eastern Oregon to want to secede, or every suburb in Minneapolis and St. Paul to secede from the Met Council, this onerous, heavy-handed regional government that promises to do for the suburbs what the city council has done for Minneapolis. That is the final answer. Take back self-government. The reason the founding fathers were terrified of consolidated power and they developed a country of dual sovereignty or divided sovereignty, otherwise known as federalism, where government, the antitrust law for government was to divide it up into little chunks like states and localities. So if it went awry, if it became tyrannical, you could vote with your feet, you could escape. Liberals want to deny escape. So they create regional governments in Portland and Minneapolis and Indianapolis that the suburbs can't escape from. Or they want to take over Florida and Texas and tell them they can't do what they're doing. I hate to say that. Well, I don't hate to say it. I love to say it. Federalism is the answer. That means divided sovereignty. The federal government has limited powers. If they go beyond that, it is the duty of the Supreme Court and judicial review to tell them they can't. And yet we have a court that's derelict because they will not take up cases like the Harvard case. They will not take up cases where employers are telling employees what to do in their personal life or their medical life. They won't take up any of this stuff. Why? Because they're chicken. The Roberts Court is chicken. Now, it's a little less so with Amy Coney Barrett on there and Clarence Thomas and the rest of the conservatives. But they still are afraid to take up these cases. And as long as they know they're afraid, and Chuck Schumer keeps threatening the independence of the court, which is a violation of separation of powers, you're going to have more of this chaos, which covers for these economic policies that are decimating middle class and poor Americans. Is that what everybody voted for? Well, people like Tina Smith pull the wool over their eyes. 1-800-282-2882. That is the contact line, as always, for the Rush Limbaugh program. I am Jason Lewis. So glad to be here guiding you through Rush's wit and wisdom. You know, I know the new program starts here soon, but I will tell you there will always be a place for Rush Limbaugh in our hearts. No one has dominated the broadcast medium and talk radio the way he has. And at rushlimbaugh.com or wherever else you find Rush, he really set something off in this country that I think is going to be the salvation of this country, and that is there is a conservative constituency that's proud to be conservative, and that's what's got the Democrats really, really worried. That's what's got the media worried. Basically, the globalists who live off of the policies of the swamp, and that's why this push for self-censorship. That's why this push to make certain that in fact, people can't express themselves because they don't want the ditto heads to rise up and give them any trouble. They just want to command and control. That's the essence of liberalism. Take away everything. Think about this. It doesn't matter whether it's Castro in Cuba or Ortega in Nicaragua or Mao or Stalin or Hitler or anybody. What do tyrants do when they get power? A, they don't want to give it up. But B, what do? They rescind the First Amendment and silence their opponents. They disarm the population. They control state-run education. If they don't own the means of production, they control production. And they jail their opponents. Does any of this sound familiar? Now, you might say, well, Jason, come on, you're engaging in hyperbole. This is a... No, I'm not. Never has there been a greater assault on the First Amendment, on the Second Amendment, on the Fourth Amendment. All the talk about, you heard it today or this week, all the talk about during the Trump administration, the DOJ had subpoenaed records of Adam Schiff, who's an absolute certifiable lunatic, by the way. And Eric, I did not have sex with Fang Fang Swalwell. Now, the reason they subpoenaed the records was those guys were lying to the public and may have been getting leaks from government officials who were breaking the law. But be that as it may, at the very same time they were getting the subpoenas, the FBI was getting records of the Trump lawyer McGahn. The real travesty of the protection of your property, your privacy, your papers, is what they did at the FISA court. Where the hell is Attorney Durham? Where is this guy? He's supposed to be investigating the fact that the swamp, the FBI, James Comey, Clapper, no doubt, and the rest of them were basically spying on their political opponents, lying about it the whole time and spying on them with an illegal FISA warrant based on fraudulent information they knew to be fraudulent. This is what third world dictators in Nicaragua do. And the Attorney Durham, I have no idea where this U.S. attorney is. He's supposed to be investigating this and give us an answer and bring charges, but have they gotten to him too? This is why this is so threatening right now. Now, you know, what's so darn threatening about it all? Well, it's threatening because the people at the top have a very, very good life. They get very, very cheap labor. So as wages are suppressed and inflation goes up, for the second straight month in May, wages were below the inflation-adjusted wage rate went down. But the globalists import cheap, not only just cheap labor, but also cheap products from slave labor in China. These are the people at the top. They don't want things to change. So you wonder why Kamala still hasn't made it to the border? It is deliberate. They want open borders. It's good for the top and the elite, the people who are making the money. This is the danger of it all. I think Dara Alyssa was on not long ago talking to Sandra Smith on Fox and had to say this about the immigration crisis.
She's going to see that the message that's being sent based on the policies of this administration are clearly saying to a young man, don't come here looking for a job, bring a family and stay. And that message is, in fact, much more of a conflict than she might realize. People who are coming as family units, because coming alone as a worker, which is historically what most people do initially, isn't working. And of course, as the weather gets hot, many young children are not going to make it across the border alive. This really is a dangerous time, and it can be stopped. Returning to the policies that would prevent families from being encouraged to come would be a huge help. It'd be a help to the Border Patrol in their enforcement also.
And by the way, guess where the largest source of remittances are? So people that come to one country and work and then send their money back home. Oh, that would be the United States, almost $70 billion, according to the World Bank. The top recipients of remittances are India, China, and Mexico, respectively. So they're getting their cheap labor, but even if you're a Keynesian and you want to the magic multiplier and want the money to churn, it's not staying here. It goes back to our previous call about all of the social division is a disguise so that the elitists who live in gated communities don't have to worry about crime, who have the assets, don't have to worry about inflation, but want to keep their profit margins up so they get cheap labor and cheap imports. This is what Trump was taking on, and now the result of that is they're trying to go after Trump, just like Daniel Ortega would. This is very, very threatening, my friends. We need some canine help. I had to throw this in here because Rush has an interesting analogy with regard to the border and our four-legged friends. Roll it.
We have three dogs. This is funny. One of the dogs is obviously the leader. They're females.
And one of the dogs will go, whenever anybody's walking by, this dog will go to the gate and start barking and protecting the homeland and all that. And the other two stand about 10 feet behind, and they start barking too. Yeah, 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 you listen to us. But they're not on the front lines. It's funny to watch. And this is what this is. We got people on the front lines. We got people not on the front lines. And some of the people not on the front lines are trying to act like they are, but they don't have the guts to go there.
I mean, that kind of describes Republicans, too, really. Some pundit years ago called it rock candy conservatism. Let's talk about tax cuts. Let's talk about national defense. Let's talk about all the things that won't get you in trouble with the woke crowd, like abortion, guns, lockdowns, immigration, China. Those are the issues that the rock candy conservatives wanted to avoid because they were just too damn hot to handle. Trump was that lead dog, and he brought us into that kicking and screaming, and now those are the only issues that matter to the real movement people. It's an interesting analogy, as usual, and Rush made it fun. Hey, Rush also made a discovery last year on the massive cost differences in cell phone plans. The big name cell phone companies charge more because they have all those retail stores, stadium sponsorships, you name it. Newer companies that have the same kind of coverage, but none of the expensive overhead, can indeed charge less, and they do. Pure Talk leads the way. If you're with Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, switching to Pure Talk could save your family over $800 a year. Switching is as easy as switching your SIM card. You can keep your number, keep your phone, or get huge discounts on the latest iPhones and Androids. There's a reason why Rush trusted Pure Talk. And there's a reason tens of thousands of listeners here on EIB have made the switch. Pure Talk delivers unparalleled customer service with every one of their reps based right here in the U.S. Get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. You heard that right. And if you go over the data, they don't charge you for it. From your cell phone, dial #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250, say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dial text message from our friends at Pure Talk. Okay, time to squeeze in a call or two on the Rush Limbaugh program. Welcome back, everybody. I am the talk show host, formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis, 1-800-282-2882, guiding you through another edition of Broadcast Excellence. Let's go to Monita, Virginia, and Rick. Thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hey, Jason, great to talk to you today.
My pleasure.
That's my pleasure, too. Quick point. Recently, the politicians have been talking about trying to bring industry back to the United States. Well, the point is, if they hadn't driven it away, they wouldn't have to bring it back. It's their policies that have been driving industry away from our country for years.
Right.
So the question is, if you're trying to solve this problem, you need to know what it is that caused the problem. Well, I don't believe any of them know what caused the problem, because if they did, they would tell us what it was and what they're going to do to fix it. So a couple of things have caused the problem. Number one of them is corporate taxes, regulations, which have driven businesses out of business or out of the country, and income taxes. So I have a quick analogy I'd like to posit, and here's how it goes. Take a typical auto worker, say GM, makes $120,000 per year. This is gross. And for the sake of this simple analogy, let's just say that the tax rate is 50%. So $60,000 is taken out of his pay. He gets $60,000 to take home. He's happy with that. That's what he sees every year. That's what he lives on. The problem is that $60,000 is taken out. That has to be paid by the company, which really isn't paid by the company because they have to pass all their costs on to the consumer. So the consumer pays the $60,000. And that $60,000 goes to the government, but it's actually a penalty on hiring workers. So the higher the taxes go, the more the penalty is, and the more the consumer has to pay. So for the sake of our simple argument, all of a sudden, if you could wave a magic wand and make that $60,000 or 50% disappear, then all of a sudden, all the prices on all the products in America, using this simple analogy, would be half price. Mm-hmm. That means that a $30,000 car only costs $15,000. But everyone who's being paid doesn't get anything less in their paycheck because they never got the tax money. It went to the government. So now all of a sudden everybody is twice as wealthy just by the simple analogy. So it doesn't matter if it's 50%, 30%, 20%. It's all the same. It all works out the same way. And basically, it's the cost on labor that is driving businesses out of the country. It has done that for 50 or 75 years. And that's why we no longer make furniture in North Carolina. It's made in China. And we no longer make drugs here. It's made in China. And it's not because their workers are so cheap. Not only do they have to make it, bring this stuff from our country over to be used for products, and they have to ship it back on boats and put it into
I think that's all true. I think the cost of employment, especially with these unemployment compensation now and the federal surplus on that, but also the payroll taxes, FICA and FUTA and all the rest. But you also have to understand this is the problem with globalism and why so many liberals and pseudo-libertarians who say they're libertarians so they can advocate liberalism are flummoxed over, not flummoxed, they're trying to hide this fundamental fact, and that is we've had the highest standard of living because primarily in the 19th century and most of, and a good chunk of the 20th century, we had a laissez-faire system in many ways that encouraged capital formation, encouraged labor, and you brought the two together and you have massive increases in productivity and standards of living. The rest of the world wasn't up to that. So when we decided that it's more important to have no tax on foreign consumption and tax domestic production, when it should have been the other way around, reduce the taxes on domestic work or production and raise taxes if you must to finance government on foreign consumption, that screwed up everything. Because now, do you think a hedge fund manager or a private equity firm gives a damn where a company they invest in makes their widgets?
Nope.
Absolutely not. That's why Wall Street is an arm of the Democrat Party. They don't care. Globalism says find the lowest cost denominator, to hell with national sovereignty and the American worker, because we can import slave labor from China. And that is what Trump was trying to fight, what I was trying to fight, what we did in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. When we finally lowered the tax, the double taxation on repatriating foreign profits back to America to build plants, we repatriated $1 trillion. Biden's trying to undo that. So your points are all correct, but I would say the fundamental problem we face now is globalists, international financiers, if you will, that don't care about American production. They're globalists. You think Tim Cook gives a damn about where his iPhones are produced? No, do you think the NBA cares about China and what they're doing to the Uyghur Muslims? No. The Uyghurs can take a back seat to NBA sneakers. All of that. So it is a problem we've got to face, and we've got to step up and say, you know what? If the government's got to have money, and it does have to have money, I'm not an anarchist. It's got to have money for defense. Got to have money to regulate some interstate commerce. The federal government has the purview of bankruptcy law, U.S. attorneys, and the like. So obviously it could be cut by about 90%. It might be a little bit much, but you get the point. But they've got to raise some funds. Up until the income tax in the first part of the 20th century, they raised them on tariffs. And the theory was, if you have to tax, why would you want to punish domestic citizens, domestic production, and have an income tax on individuals, income tax on small business? Why not replace that, have a zero tax there, and have a tariff, a uniform tariff, a BAT, a border adjustment tax? And the globalists say, hell no, we worship at the god of free trade, free importation of cheap labor on the border, because we don't care about sovereignty. We care about the next quarter. And this really is the awakening of a lot of conservatives in the Republican Party who worshiped at the shrine of a global market up until their family was devastated because the plant closed. I'm Jason Lewis in on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Oh, man, oh, man, do we have a whale of a story coming up next hour for you. Tons of fun in the third hour of the Rush Limbaugh program today. I am Jason Lewis. Don't forget RushLimbaugh.com. That's RushLimbaugh.com. It is still out there, and you need to make certain you remember it, because that's where we're going to get all of the things you need to keep Rush in your mind and just relive some of the great memories. You can choose a monthly subscription, lock in a full year. Download the app. RushLimbaugh.com in the App Store, at Apple Store or Google Play. Rush is always there for you at Rush 24/7. So don't forget to check that out. This story coming up, though, is an absolute hoot. All I'm going to tell you is this. It has something to do with Robert Shaw, the late, great Robert Shaw of the movie The Sting and Jaws and Lobsters. Now, let your mind run away with that for a moment. No, I didn't add medical clinic in there. I could have, but I didn't. This is going to be fun, so we'll continue with that. And also try to squeeze in some calls if we have time next hour. We've actually had gotten to a few, and we'll continue with that. So stick around on EIB. You know, just to be entirely bipartisan about all of this, did I tell you, can I remind you what a great job President Biden is doing in Europe at the G7? Can I just remind you what a great job President Biden is doing? And she brought her husband along on the trip. I thought that was really nice. I mean, what the heck? Third hour underway on the program, 1-800-282-2882. It is the talk show host formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis, guiding you through another edition of the Best of El Rushbo, and glad to do it. Now, I had to work hard and long. Okay, I really didn't do it. Allie did it. But nevertheless, one of us had to work hard and long over trying to find a segue to Russia's Larry the Lobster. You know, it is National Lobster Day. And Rush had a very, very funny little bit years ago on Larry the Lobster. It was just a great metaphor, if you will. So I'm thinking to myself, how do we get there? How can we set up Larry the Lobster? Well, lo and behold, in my hours and hours of searching last night for great stories, what do I come up with? On this National Lobster Day, there was a fellow, hey, if you can believe in UFOs, which apparently are real, I mean, just look at the Democratic Convention, the greatest collection of aliens since the Star Wars bar scene. But if UFOs are real, you can believe this. There's a guy in Cape Cod who claims he was swallowed by a humpback whale while diving for lobsters. I told you it was a stretch, but just bear with me. Michael Packard, 56 years old, driving off, what was it, to Herring Cove Beach last Friday morning when he felt a bump and then everything went dark. Reminds me of my honeymoon. At first, he thought Jaws got him, right? I mean, this was it. And then he didn't feel any teeth. He instantly realized, as most people would, right? I'm in a whale. I mean, come on, it's happened to you. Packard described 40 agonizing seconds where he says he braced for the next moment thinking he'd get, you know, eaten or sucked into the big belly and done for. But then all of a sudden, the whale realized that this is not the right season for human and started thrashing its head, spitting him back out into the water. And this guy's buddy, Captain Joe Francis, this is Michael Packard's buddy, says he witnessed the tail end, pardon the pun, the tail end of the ordeal and helped bring him to safety.
Here's what Francis said. I saw Mike come flying out of the water feet first with his flippers on and land back in the water. So I jumped aboard the boat. We got him up, got his tank off, and got him on the deck coming down. He goes, Joe, he goes, I was in the mouth of a whale, he goes. I can't believe it. I was in the mouth of a whale, Joe.
You know, I wasn't there for that, but I did sit through an episode of Flipper last night. Does that count for anything? No? All right. You can't believe he was in the mouth of a whale. Packard was apparently hospitalized with some soft tissue damage to the legs, but he's otherwise doing pretty well. Now, look, I thought for sure, you know, after hearing this story, I don't know about you, but really, I'm going back to Robert Shaw in Jaws, and this is what I thought we'd hear.
When I was a boy, every little squid wanted to be a harpooner or a sword fisherman. What do you got here? Portable shark or a monkey cage?
Anti-shark cage.
Anti-shark cage. You go inside the cage. Cage goes in the water. You go in the water. Shark's in the water. Our shark. Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we
I've received orders for to sail back to Boston, and so nevermore shall we see you again.
Well, you go into a shark cage or you get swallowed by a humpback whale. What's the difference? The point is, it's an unbelievable story, and I thought the perfect segue to the Larry the Lobster story from Rush TV days.
Here's Stephen, back to the phones. Gainesville, Florida. Great to have you on the program, sir. Hello.
Mega dittos, Rush. It's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
You used to have a show on TV about 20-something years ago, and I was a kid at the time, and I picked it up on my antenna. And I remember you had this lobster in the background, and you had him in a tank, and you said you were going to eat him on Friday. And this was before the internet, and there's only three major networks. And I just remember how much, you know, uproar you brought nationally because you said you were going to eat a lobster at the end of the week. And what that told me was this. It just showed me that, one, Democrats don't have any sense of humor, and two, they'll make a ruckus out of anything. So there's nothing logical about that.
Let me explain the lobster story, because you watched it when you were young. There are actually two elements to the lobster story. The first element is that a Los Angeles Malibu, I think, bar or restaurant had Larry the Lobster. They had named him in the tank. He was big and he was old, and they were going to eat Larry. I mean, they were gonna do what they did, and Mary Tyler Moore and a couple of other Hollywood actresses launched a campaign to save Larry the Lobster, and I entered the bidding to buy Larry the Lobster so that I could eat him and share him with my audience. And that further outraged them. When I lost, there's a second lobster story. Katie Couric was doing a cooking episode with some chef on the Today Show. And the chef is cooking lobster. And the chef started cutting up a live lobster and throwing the parts on a skillet. And Katie was grossed out. Ew! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! What are you doing? Oh, my... And the chef, well, this is what you do. I mean, you got to do these a certain way, otherwise they'll poison you. Oh, my God! So then we had, later in the week, after playing that, of course, I didn't bring in a lobster and a chef and all that, but we brought the friends over from Patsy's and started throwing fried calamari to the audience. So we did two episodes with the lobster. Yeah, the Patsy guys came over and just giant vats of fried calamari, and I just started throwing it into the audience in honor of Katie Couric being grossed out by watching the way you cook a lobster. Good memory, sir. That's 20 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time. I was only, I don't know, 12 or 13 at the time. But, you know, the thing, it's just a paradigm to explain how illogical the liberals are on anything.
Actually, it's a paradigm to explain Greta on global warming from across the pond. How childish liberals. I'm telling you, Victor Davis Hanson had the best line last week at some point where he said the millennial left, and I think the entire left, is stuck in prolonged adolescence. If you look at liberalism, it's a failure to grow up and realize their costs and benefits, that sometimes you don't want to, you know, go on the slaughterhouse and watch them making sausage. The fact is that they just cannot accept the adult world. And what they say in their minds is no different than what your seventh grader might say, which is precisely why they want seventh graders to vote. Allentown, Pennsylvania. Stephen, thanks for waiting. You're on the Rush Limbaugh program with me, Jason Lewis.
Hello, Jason.
Hello.
Thank you for continuing Rush's mission of, you know, sharing common sense for the common good. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, we have to do that because pretty soon, if we don't, we'll all be living here in Allentown where they've closed all the factories down.
You know what? That song came out the year I graduated high school, and I got beat up so much from all my friends who I had grown up with in New Jersey. You can't believe it.
You're kidding. That's a great song. It's one of my favorite songs. It was out on Nylon Curtain, Billy Joel's, shall we say, experiment with Lennon-esque music in 1982. And it was all about the depression of 1982 that was sure to bring Ronald Reagan down and didn't.
And, I mean, in the long run, it worked out well for me. In the short run, I had a lot of grief, but, you know.
Grief over what, listening to that song?
No, people giving me, I can't say it on the air.
Oh, because you're from Allentown. I got
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Met our mothers in the USO. Well, yeah, that was a great tune. Great tune.
Closing all the factories down. It was like, oh, please.
That'll be Joe Biden's theme song now.
There you go.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that. That's brilliant. Yeah.
Doing for the country what we've done for Allentown.
Doing for the country. I'm doing for the country what we did for Allentown. That should be a banner on every Joe Biden website. And that, now that's brilliant. Now that's good.
What's
holy
on your mind?
Mackerel. Like, holy mackerel. Now that's funny. I can see why you have this job and I don't.
Stephen, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. That was, you know, by the way, I digress, but I think one of the guys that is, and I know you Springsteen fans are going to get after me, for this, but I'll take Long Island and Billy Joel any day of the week over Springsteen. Now, don't get me wrong. Springsteen's good. I enjoyed both of his hits, but Billy Joel is probably the best American songwriter. Pop songwriter we've had, and just a ton of great tunes. And Nylon Curtain was an underrated album. I happen to like rock and roll. See, I happen to like pop music, and I remember all those albums. And of course, Glass Houses was another classic. No, I could go on this, but I will not, and I will spare you, just like Joe Biden ought to spare us. Back with more on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. I am Jason Lewis, your host, your guide today. For the latest of Russia's wit and wisdom, including those great bumpers like that last one. I could go on, but I won't. I won't, because not everybody likes that kind of stuff. 1-800-282-2882. By the way, the first state to shut down due to COVID-19, California, wouldn't you know it, reopens today. How appropriate is that, friends? Because what essentially Biden's trying to do, yeah, doing for the country what was done to Allentown, but he's trying to make Minnesota a cold California, and Minnesota is well on the way to a cold California. Here, where I'm located, in the land of 10,000 taxes, otherwise known as Minnesota, the governor requested an extension for emergency powers for the 15th time. The 15th time. Now, as an earlier caller mentioned, a year ago, I was embroiled in a United States Senate race. I'd served a term in the House, and I will tell you, it's, you know, when you're in a swing district in the House of Representatives, it is life in 15-minute increments. It's not a glamorous job at all. But we got so much done in those first 2 years of the Trump administration, from VA reform to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act to energy independence to the deregulation that gave us the energy independence and all the rest. And had it not been for John McCain changing his mind the last moment, we would have been well on the way to health care reform. But I knew, you know, everything was going to hit the fan once the Democrats took control. So I made the calculation, if I'm going back to Washington, I'm going to back as a 6-year term senator so I can really get something done and focus on policy instead of raising money all the time. Well, I ran against Tina Smith a year ago, and the hallmark of our campaign, and I will say this, yes, we lost, but I gathered more votes than any Republican in statewide history in Minnesota. I actually thought we were going to win. We were down a point or two going into the fall. Then all of a sudden, I had this emergency surgery the last week of the campaign. But we still did our best, put our best foot forward, and were proven right. Because I will tell you, friends, a year ago right now, I was suing the governor. I was suing the governor of Minnesota for abuse of power. I thought he violated the Privileges and Immunities Clause. If they're going to use that, you know, to invoke federal power over the states, or if you're going to use the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, which they use to rule what state law can pass muster and which can't, why can't you use it to strike down these emergency powers and these Orwellian shutdowns, which were totally unnecessary? Every single prediction, the Minnesota Department of Health, Anthony Fauci, the CDC, all the proponents of lockdowns made, Gavin Newsom to Andrew Cuomo, were wrong. the number of deaths, the number of fatalities, how at risk school-age children were, how at risk the vulnerable were, where Tim Walz and Andrew Cuomo were putting COVID-positive patients in congregated living facilities for the elderly, a.k.a. nursing homes, while they were shutting down kids, causing them the greatest cycle of depression in modern history. It was the greatest mismanagement of a public health challenge in history. It was used to amass power, not anything else. You can go back to the Spanish flu. We didn't shut down the economy. You can fast forward to 1957, 58, when Eisenhower went through a horrible flu season, did not shut down the economy. 1968, another one, didn't shut the economy. H1N1 did not shut the economy down. Only when the Democrats saw, when liberals saw, when the media saw that they could use this to their benefit to punish their enemies and reward their friends, when they could execute the most unimaginable power over people's lives, did they exploit a public health challenge for political expediency. And I sued the governor over it. And I said just these words a year ago. There is no reason that Governor Tim Walz should have emergency powers for the 15th time. If we had leadership at the state capitol in a serious sense, and if Republicans would take a lesson across this country from Trump and grow a backbone and take on these people, instead of trying to get a nice column out of the Star Tribune or the New York Times or the LA Times or CNN, we could fight back. But I will tell you, this is going to go down as the great calamity, the great Corona con. What we did vis-a-vis the lockdown will have done more damage than the virus itself. I want you to remember that, because I believed it a year ago, and I believe it now. Let's go to Central Utah. Al, you're up next on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for all you do, and mega dittos to the man who tried to save America with every breath.
Amen to that, my friend.
I sit here as a citizen, a disabled veteran, a child of the early 60s. What do we do to save our country and prevent ourselves from becoming Venezuela? I mean,
we
talk about it all the time,
yep.
But what do we actually do now to stop it before they disarm us and march us to the trains?
Well, you may not like what I'm about to say, but the first thing you could do in Central Utah is make certain Mitt Romney doesn't win another election. I mean, as so often is the case, the problem lies within ourselves. The Democrats speak with one voice. They're socialist oppressors. The squad is the Democrat Party. They know it. Schumer knows it. Pelosi knows it. The media know it. And so they have no problem circling the wagons. Republicans circle the wagons and shoot inward. Either you're not pure enough, or you're too much like Trump, or this or that. And you've got this cabal of Adam Kinzinger, Mitt Romney Republicans, Liz Cheney Republicans, that don't understand what Trump tapped into. They're stuck in a time warp when Gerald Ford was the Republican leader. Not that I don't like Gerald Ford, but that's not going to work against committed socialists. You're going to have to fight fire with fire. You have to get down and dirty. They won't do it.
That's my question. Where do we go from here to prevent our dead parents from voting in the next election, from preventing the government from coming in? And I believe the COVID lockdown was just a prelude to martial law. It was a test run.
What happened during the COVID? You're right. You're absolutely right. What happened during the lockdown? What happened during the lockdown was the government could tell you what to wear, where the origin started, and they lied about it. They could tell you that millions would die next week. They were wrong. They could tell you it was nothing to worry about. They were wrong. They were wrong at every turn. But what they did get out of it was every Secretary of State on the liberal side of the aisle changed election law as a complete and grotesque violation of the Constitution. Once again, I mentioned earlier that the Supreme Court was derelict. They're not taking up cases. They were derelict in the election law fights. Not to say one election was right and one was wrong or who won in this, is that the secretaries of state usurped the powers of the legislative branch of their states and rewrote election law to make it easier for Biden voters. That is an unassailable fact. And they want to continue that in perpetuity. And that is a challenge that Republicans have to step up to right now. You know, it's not just their demeanor. A lot of people think, well, you know, people like Lewis don't like Romney or McCain or Cheney because they're establishment Republicans and they're not tough enough. They don't insult people enough like Trump. That's not it at all. I was in the belly of the beast when we were trying to get things done. And I will tell you, there were factions in the party, some on the purist side that undercut us, say, on immigration reform, and they know who they are. But mostly you're dealing with a bunch of liberals who didn't mind Obamacare. I want you to think about this for a second. Mitt Romney gave us Obamacare in Massachusetts, basically set up exchanges. Basically set up the template for subsidizing people and putting mandates on insurance and making certain that we don't have catastrophic insurance coverage. We have prepaid medicine, which vastly inflated the cost of insurance and medical care. You think he was going to undo it? And then when we had a chance to actually replace Obamacare when I was in Congress and do it the right way, the fundamental problem with Obamacare was there was no incentive to buy catastrophic insurance. If they could not deny anyone the right to have insurance, then why not let your insurance lap, wait till it laps, wait till you get sick, and then go in and buy it at the same rate as everybody else? That's exactly what was happening, and people were gaming the system. And what happened was the number of people in the insurance pools shrank, and the people that stayed in the insurance pools were the sick. Insurance doesn't work that way. Insurance only works, and it doesn't matter whether it's automobile insurance or car insurance or home insurance or any kind of insurance, if you get people who don't file claims to pay premiums. It subsidizes risk. Also, prices risk, which is crucial. So we had developed a way with the American Health Care Act to basically make certain no one could be denied insurance, but there was a modest penalty if you dropped it only to buy it again when you got sick, just like Kennedy Kassenbaum from years ago for employer-based care. We also let prices float so that people who were healthy and took care of themselves would pay less than people who didn't do that. Obviously, if the insurance industry can only charge one price or has to operate within a narrow band, it's going to charge the high price. All of this would have resulted in 2018 in lower in premiums with the same amount of coverage. Invisible pools for the sick, which is a much better way to cover them than the exchanges. And a basic level of catastrophic care and encouraging consumers to pay for routine expenses and making certain that one expense wouldn't bankrupt them. All of this would have worked. So what happened? We finally, after two votes, we got it out of the House of Representatives. We went to the Rose Garden, celebrated, thinking the Senate would take it. It was Republican controlled. And what did John McCain do at the last minute? Told McConnell, I'm good. Sticks his thumb down and kills even the skinny repeal, which torpedoed any chance of reforming health care, of replacing Obamacare. And those purists on the Senate side didn't help either. They were busy throwing arrows at this bill because it wasn't perfect enough. And what happened in 2018? The Democrats bludgeoned Republicans like myself over health care. They didn't bludgeon us over the economy. It was roaring already. They didn't bludgeon us over the tax cut bill because that was working. They bludgeoned us over to health care because we didn't get it passed and we didn't have the benefits of reform yet. And that's what the squishes do. They don't have the guts to stand up and take the tough votes. That's why I say you got to clean up your own house. And that's a job for Republicans. You got to grow a spine. There shouldn't be one person running for office in any state who isn't running on voter ID, taking away the governor's limitless emergency powers, and restoring law and order. That's it. If you're running for a state house seat from Minnesota to Maine, those are the three things you need to run on. Restoring law and order, voter ID, and undoing the lockdowns by taking away these outrageous emergency powers by these would-be tyrants. Now, some states do that. They require one house of the legislature or both houses of the legislature to sign off, but some states don't. And these governors are running amok. They're running wild with these powers. And that's the problem at the state level. Right here in Duluth, Minnesota, let's go to Eric. Thanks for waiting, Eric. You're on the Rush Limbaugh program with Jason Lewis.
Thank you for taking my call, Jason. I got a comical little story for you. When Mark Dayton was governor, he had scheduled a visit to my son's elementary school. So using the Greta Thunberg theory, I put a PolyMet mining hat on him and a North Dakota coal T-shirt on him and sent him to school. Amazingly enough, Dayton pulled a no-show, and I think he was just simply afraid to debate a 7-year-old.
Jeez. Well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, Mark Dayton sort of was the precursor to Joe Biden. Clearly someone who was in over their head and, frankly, incompetent, incoherent mentally half the time, but got a pass by the media.
Well, I always ask the question about Mark Dayton. Why didn't he work for the family business?
Who would have him?
Exactly.
Eric, thanks for checking in. By the way, for those of you, as Rush used to say in Rio Linda, understand that where this guy's calling from, Duluth, and really north-northwest of Duluth, is the Iron Range of Minnesota. Now, there's a reason they call it the Iron Range. Iron ore built this country. It won us World War II. It built the factories. Then what happened to the Iron Range in Minnesota was that until taconite was discovered, which was a methodology, basically, taconite pellets, it was dying. It sort of got a revival under taconite, and now there's been a war on mining ever since. The environmental left wants to ban mining so China can do it in a much more environmentally degrading way, and that's exactly what's happening. Well, now they've discovered rare earth minerals on the Iron Range. Copper, you name it. All of the things that basically power the Green Revolution, which is ironic. They won't let them get at that. PolyMet and another mine up there, the big flashpoints for this. And so we're not just outsourcing oil or fossil fuels. We're out coal or anything else. We're outsourcing mining, too. And it's a huge problem for people that look at the Iron Range, which has been just devastated. And Duluth, which has been devastated, the port of Duluth used to ship that stuff. They don't anymore. And you've got these two, PolyMet and Twin Metals that say we have may have the largest reserves of copper nickel in the world underneath our ground, and we can't get at it. And they can't get at it because the mining opponents tie it up with environmental permits, with lawsuits, with the media, you name it. And they spew lies like it's inside the Boundary Waters canoe area where it isn't. All of this, it's just sort of a microcosm of what's happening to our manufacturing, to energy, all over the United States. North Carolina and Blake, you're next up on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network.
Good afternoon. Megadiddos from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, sir.
You bet. Beautiful
thank
spot.
Thank you, folks. First of all, thank you, folks, for all that you do. I don't know where we'd be without it. Anyway, I was telling the screener here, someone a week or so ago called into a talk show. It might have been this one, could have been Hannity, could have been Mark Levin. And instead of the term woke, which is hard to define, you can't find a legitimate definition for it anywhere. And as your screener told me, said, words do mean things. Words have meanings. Enlightened, and I'm stealing it, enlightened is a much, I think, sarcastically, a much better term than woke. If these people have been enlightened and they know the way.
Well, I got to run, but I tell you what they are. They say they are woke. They are woke to reality. What it really means is they are finally woke to hating America. And there's a difference between criticizing your government and hating your country. That's what they're woke to. Rush knew a thing about technology, a thing or two about technology, and he maintained or I would say he mentioned it once. In fact, he was a technological whiz. He said a thousand things about technology that were frankly above my pay grade, but basically what he was saying was it makes our lives simpler. Legacy Box proves that point. Their technology allows you to digitally transfer all your old family movies and videotapes, you know, all those great memories. You can relive them again and preserve them. Listen to the way Rush describes this procedure.
We recommend one company that you can trust to digitalize, or I should say digitize, your family's special memories captured on film and videotape, and that's Legacy Box, the company that's based in Tennessee. What they do is they take all of your old memories that are on videotape that's no longer playable, like Betamax, VHS, Super 8 film, and they transfer it digitally, high speed transfer, best way to maintain the original quality, and put it on DVDs or thumb drives, however you want it. And that way, when you get it back, you can watch it for the first time in who knows how long. You can copy it. You can edit it. You give it to other family members. And it's something you can't do on your own. You don't have the equipment. The equipment's pretty expensive to do this with. Legacy Box has done this now for more than a million families. And with every project they take on, they take great care to protect your film and video and carefully preserve every image. And, well, of course they would. Bottom line is legacybox.com/rush. That's the website. If you've got even still photographs, if you've got old slides that you had to use a projector to see, 8mm or even 16mm film, VHS Betamax, if you've got those tapes and you don't even remember what's on them, send them all off to Legacy Box. You'll get it all back in 2 weeks. And I guarantee you, you'll be smiling and laughing at things that you thought you would never see again, things that you may have forgotten that you had. LegacyBox.com/rush. It'll also save you 50% off the current pricing.
Hey, trying to keep with the theme today, you know. First we did Rush's dog patrol on the border, right? Then we did the Lobster Day story. How about this one? Today's EIB high note about a very, very special retirement. Odie, a 10-year-old seeing eye dog, has been accompanying Chris Edwards, who is blind, the past 8.5 years on Virgin Australia flights between Melbourne and Canberra. And he became such a fixture on the regular route the two would take that the crew grew quite fond of this little seeing eye dog named Odie. So when the time came for him to hang up his harness and transition from a working dog to a family pet, the airline threw a party in his honor. If you've ever been to airports, like you know, I'm sure you have. They're all over the place now. They've got these groups that will have a dog, a seeing eye dog, in the lobby or something. It's really fun. And you can understand why this guy got choked up expressing his gratitude for the independence and freedom that his faithful companion had provided him over the years. Here's what Chris Edwards said.
To be able to live the life I choose, to be able to have the freedom that I have, he has been such a loyal, excellent worker and a great friend, a great companion. I just want to thank him. I just want to thank him for all the independence that, you know, he's provided me.
Man, oh man, that is an EIB high note. And you got to see the retirement cake the airline made for Odie, the seeing eye dog. We've posted it over at rushlimbaugh.com with a video to the story. It's also at the Times Australian, but rushlimbaugh.com with a video to the story. And you can get all of Rush's wisdom and world knowledge and great good nature, his wit, available on each and every page of Rush 24/7 at rushlimbaugh.com. Now, don't forget, this is still up and running. Use Rush 24/7 to find out what Rush said on any topic. You can listen to entire old shows, watch him on the Ditto Cam through the vast audio and video archives available exclusively to Rush 24/7 members. Just use the search function on the site. It's rushlimbaugh.com. You can choose a monthly subscription or lock in a full year, and Rush stays with you forever. So be sure to download the app in the Apple Store or Google Play. Rush is always there for you at Rush 24/7, rushlimbaugh.com. Squeeze in one more call before the break. Utah once again in Payson, or in Payson, I should say. Here is Gina, is that right?
It's Gus.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's Gus. Gus, go ahead, Gus.
Yeah, Jason, a caller a few minutes ago. Oh, mega dittos to Rush's family.
A caller a few minutes ago was talking about Mitt Romney, and you said we need to get rid of him. I'd like some advice on how to do that, because for every Republican that will vote against him, I don't know how many Democrats are going to be for him. It seems like an impossible hill to climb.
Utah, home of Paul Laxett, Reagan country, you name it. A lot of listeners to this program wonder how Romney survives in such a place. And you can tell us, how does he? Is it the Democrats, or is it just squishy Republicans, or what is it?
You know, they've put billboards up along the freeway that says, "Dear Mitt, please quit." I mean, there's people don't like him, but I just don't see how we'll get rid of him.
Well, I mean, it could very well be. You don't have to have a 60-40 or 50-50 state to be competitive. If the state is only 25% Democrat, but they all rally for Romney, yeah, that and the other squishes could probably keep him in there. But I will tell you, you're not going to change this nation with those sorts of Republicans. And if you're good with that, if you're good with things just going right down the way they always have, then I guess you're good with Mr. Romney, but some of us think there ought to be change. I'm Jason Lewis in on the Rush Limbaugh program. We'll come back and wrap things up after this. Well, you knew the bad news was coming. It just came in. It's official. Biden's coming back home. You know, we could only hope, people, but he's coming back. There's nothing we can do about it. I am the talk show host, formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis, guiding you through another edition of the Rush Limbaugh program. It has been my pleasure today to do so, and happy to announce I'll be back tomorrow once again as we get you up to date on everything, not only on all the latest news in inflation and immigration and all the rest, but also on making certain we find the best Rush clips that apply to the news of the day, because you know and I know they always do. We'll see you tomorrow.